Thank you for joining us for Rural Race Talks on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, and streaming on the web at coastradio.org. 2500 by my friend Hannah Herod from Rural Organizing Project. We will talk about their work in rural communities across Oregon, some of the challenges and triumphs they've had over the past year, and how we can continue to support grassroots efforts for change. Later, we will talk about the work of equity and ask the question, is it working? We're looking forward to another great show, but before we get started, here's Dion.
It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields, there are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Oh, listen, Lord, if you want to know. There's just too little love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for
what the world needs now is love, sweet love. Thank you again for joining us on Coast Radio, Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, and streaming on the web at coastradio.org. I am so excited to have one of my newest friends over the last year, Hannah, joining us today. And I'm just going to share a little bit about you, and then we're going to dig right in. So Hannah joined Rural Organizing Project in 2016 to help send a contingent of rural Oregonians to Standing Rock. Working with RLP felt like a homecoming, and she joined the team as an organizer in 2017. Born and raised mostly in Douglas County, Hannah's commitment to rural organizing comes from her deep knowledge of the incredible resilience and courage of rural communities. Hannah has worked for the last decade as an organizer and educator around economic, racial, LGBTQ plus issues. She first began organizing around foreclosure defense and housing security in her neighborhood. She was moved by watching her neighbors reclaim foreclosed homes and take care of each other in such a tangible and courageous way, and it secured her commitment to offering her time and energy towards building communities that support the well-being of everyone in them. She is passionate about supporting strong and vibrant groups and bringing her skills as a facilitator to the work that she does. When she isn't organizing, she can usually be found instigating dance parties or at the ceramic studio, elbow deep in clay. Welcome, Hannah. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Lanisha. Thanks. It's really good to be with you. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm just interested in just reading your bio. I would love to hear more about how you actually just got started watching your neighbors reclaim foreclosed homes. What was that like?
Yeah, so, you know, I grew up in a rural community, but I moved to Portland for college. And when I was a student, you know, Portland has been and is in the midst of so much gentrification. And in the neighborhood that I was living in at the time, there was some Black families who had their homes foreclosed on because of, you know, Portland's predatory lending policies and the history of, you know, really redlining communities and making it difficult for folks to stay in their homes. And so there was organizing around keeping folks in those homes. And that was sort of when I got started. I was like walking by, one of my neighbor's house, and I was like, what are all these people doing? They're like sitting outside and eating and laughing and hanging out, and there's all these signs everywhere about why, you know, like, and started talking to me about what was going on. And it was really, it connected a lot of dots for me. And I was like, oh, okay. This is what I want to be doing. So for me, that was kind of the jumping off point into organizing. And I got involved in that work. And then from there, you know, many, many other things that led me to ROP.
Awesome. I want to backtrack for a minute. You said two words that maybe some in our audience aren't sure what they mean. And so let's talk about gentrification and redlining, what those are.
Yes. Thank you. I'm so glad that you are saying that. So those are really when, you know, neighborhoods that have been, you know, historically maybe poor areas, or, you know, places where folks can live in affordable housing, start attracting new businesses and people get to displace. So there's like oftentimes, you know, maybe corporations are coming in and building new housing developments, or wealthier folks are moving into the neighborhood because suddenly that neighborhood is appealing because real estate is low. And then it drives up housing and folks who can no longer afford to stay in their homes, so have maybe lived there for a really long time and get pushed out.
Awesome. And then the redlining added a whole nother layer to that, right?
Yes, totally. Redlining was where there were like discriminatory, where banks would maybe not lend to folks or would have, you know, different types of lending practices to folks based on race or ethnicity. And so, you know, folks would be unable to live in certain parts of town or in certain neighborhoods and were kind of forced into specific neighborhoods. And then often those neighborhoods then got taken over by gentrification, so they were pushed out again. So it's been a process where poor folks and particularly folks of color are often kind of pushed into certain neighborhoods that are considered less desirable, and then they build up strong and vibrant communities in those places and then are removed from those.
So one of the arguments we might hear is, oh, that's the reason that doesn't happen anymore. But honestly, I do know even here on the coast in some of our exclusive areas that if you look in the title documents, there's still possibly some language that suggests that no one can, even though it seems like it's been so long ago, it may not be used anymore, but the language is still embedded in a lot of what we do. And even gentrification, I look at what's happening in Inglewood, California, which is where I was born. And I was born at St. Nella Hospital in Inglewood, right around the corner from the Forum where Magic and Kareem used to play. And they just built the new LA Rams and Chargers stadium right there in the city of Inglewood. Even though they're a Los Angeles team, it's because they're in LA County, not because they're in LA. And to see the gentrification happening where businesses who have been there for 40 and 50 years can no longer afford their rent, it's really just heartbroken, because as we push for our strive to equity, some of the same practices that we use to entertain the masses really destroy the legacy and the foundation for so many families to be able to build generational wealth, which is something that is still growing as far as who can attain that effort. So still a lot of unfortunate gentrification happening, not just in Portland. I know there was a story I read about recently in Portland, that community came maybe in a not so gracious manner to help save a family's home in Portland just in the last several months. And so it's still happening. But now I want to talk about Rural Organizing Project and the work as an organization that you are doing. And just real quick, I love the mission of RLP. It is to strengthen the skills, resources, and vision of primary leadership in local autonomous human dignity groups, with the goal of keeping such groups a vibrant source for a just democracy. And everything that you guys do are guided by three key principles. Every human matters. Every issue is interconnected. And it's all about transformational organizing now.
Yeah, well, like you named when you were reading out, the focus of our work is really about supporting strong groups for the long haul. And it's because we found really over time, you know, in the work that having folks who are like deeply rooted in their communities, who know their communities best, who are saying like, this is the priorities and what's needed. And then working from there and bringing more folks in is really how things can get done over time. And, you know, positive change can be made in the communities. And I think also, you know, we really focus on groups because we found that, you know, things are always shifting and changing in our lives. And maybe somebody has a baby or somebody moves away or, you know, so really having groups that can hold the work of like, this is, you know, how we want to make our community better and we're going to do it together. And that way, you know, if somebody has to step back, new folks can come in to the work and really sustain it over time. So it's really a phenomenal thing that I love about our network and the way it's structured is that folks are making decisions about their own priorities locally and then, you know, being able to share strategies from, you know, across counties. So we've got folks in Wallowa County talking to folks in Curry County about what they're working on and really being able to build each other up in that way, which is so powerful. And some of the, you know, some of the really powerful work that's been happening in COVID has been really focused on, you know, folks identifying, you know, in our communities, the pandemic has made so clear the ways that we've already been struggling and the ways that rural Oregon has already been under-resourced for so long. And so trying to get through the pandemic is even harder, right? Because of so many basic needs that aren't being met. So a lot of the focus of the network has been like, how do we help each other survive this time? And also how do we be thinking about what is our vision for rural Oregon where all of us can thrive? And what does that mean? And how do we get there? And so that, you know, we're not just struggling through another crisis in the same way in the future.
Definitely. And, you know, and there's such a difference I've learned. You know, I thought I would never be a rural kind of girl. I grew up in Los Angeles in the big city. But we moved to Omaha when I was like 21. And then we ended up in Washington and I was in Seattle area for 13 years. And even there, it took me a little while to get accustomed to sort of a slower pace of living because LA is on 24/7. There's always something to do, always somewhere to go. And so many resources, right? Like there's nothing you can't have access to. But I have really fell in love with living rural. And it's so funny because anybody, you know, that's known my life, it's like, this is so not where we thought I'd be. And there are such great opportunities to grow in community in rural areas, I think, that don't touch more urban and metropolitan areas. So can we talk a little bit about some of the differences in organizing between urban and rural areas? And the challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think like such a great example of this. So Rural Organizing Project does a podcast and radio show that airs on Coast Community Radio also called Rural Roots Rising. And I had the privilege of interviewing Lanisha for the show. And we're actually featuring Rural Race Talks. Last month, we did an episode that started talking about the show. And then next month, we're doing another episode, a part two about it. And when we were talking, one of the stories I loved that you shared in our interview, Lanisha, was like how on the podcast, or sorry, on the radio show, you know, folks will hear it and then interact with you in your daily life, right? So you'll like go to the grocery store and somebody will be like, oh my gosh, are you the person that does the radio show? Like, thank you for that. This is how it has impacted me. And I think that is one of like the great strengths and great challenges of rural organizing is it's like, you know, you're organizing with and around your neighbors and, you know, the people that you know, there's no anonymity. It's not just like you, you know, you're a, sort of a sea and a sea of faces. It's, you know, the work that you do is visible and it's intertwined in, you know, your knowledge of the place that you live and the folks who live in it. And, you know, I was just talking with some folks yesterday who were talking about the work that they're doing around police in their communities and changing some of the policies and practices of how police are interacting with unhoused folks and folks of color in town. And they were like, yeah, you know, we went to high school with the police chief's daughter. So we just like went over, you know, we just went over for tea to talk, you know, so there's like that dynamic, right? Which is that you're like so intertwined in ways that are sometimes challenging, but also allow you to like be based in your relationships with each other in a different way as well. And so much of the organizing and work happens through that like web of the relationships and conversations. And it's another reason why ROP really believes in organizing in groups. So, you know, some of our groups will really get a lot of pushback and sometimes even really pretty severe threats to their safety for the work that they're doing. And so that's, you know, a real piece of it too, is folks having to work together to help keep each other safe in those moments. Particularly this last year, we had, you know, there was Black Lives Matter protests all over the state and every county in the state, which is just amazing, really powerful role organizing statewide. But a lot of folks were getting threats, both individually and as groups, for that work. And so there's also, you know, that just, I think, goes back to the no anonymity part of, like, people know who you are. And so when you're doing that work, you have to be doing it together. Yeah.
And you bring up a really good point, because I've shared with people, you know, some of the downside, I would say, of organizing and being out there like that, especially when most people around you know who you are. I'll never forget, I was featured in a Sunday article of the Oregonian, probably, I think, in 2017. And the next day, my bank account, there was an attempt on my bank account to be hacked. And I'm very thankful that my bank caught it. And so nothing was able to be moved or anything. But I think that, especially in the age of technology, where anybody can find out almost anything about a person. And when we come to avenues and we're showing up emotionally, and almost like that frontline army, like we're sinking arms and we're walking this line together, so that, you know, if there's a hit taken, it's easier to withstand because there's an army of us and it's not just one person trying to move forward. And so I really love the synergy that comes from community, even just from the organizer's standpoint, right, of having a resource of like, hey, and I know I've called you several times, a couple of times with tears, you know, just like, here's what I'm going through right now. And I, you know, and just being able to talk through it. And so the fact that we have that support here in Oregon and in rural communities, I just want to thank you. Helped me in the last several months. And so I really appreciate that.
I love being in a relationship with you. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
When you call me. No, not at all. I love when you call, and I'm so grateful to get to do this work. And and I think, just to your point quickly, I'll just also add too that I think, you know, the other things that you named is how much often of the, like, the organizing infrastructure and resourcing, you know, whether that's like groups and funding and those types of things, are based in urban spaces. And so to be able to have this network where it is like, you can call me up and, you know, I'll answer, and vice versa. I can call you up and I know you'll answer. And right. And I might have ideas about, like, who in another community is doing similar work, who could be a strategy partner in that moment. And so I think it's also one of the challenges of rural organizing is that lack of infrastructure. But one of the things that we're really loving, that we love and think is so powerful about the creation and really inspire the creation of the ROP network, is like, how do we create that resourcing for each other and that hub for each other?
And I think that's important because, I mean, even you take, let's just take politics out of everything, right? But you just think about how different urban and rural is. Like, I'll never forget my first interaction or introduction to rural was in Mississippi. That's where my dad grew up and where his parents were. And I remember going to Lorman, Mississippi, thinking, this is crazy. Like, who lives like that? You know, they had pigs, they had goats. I learned how to ride horses there. They had chicken outside that you had to churn to squeeze out the water. And I thought it was so foreign. And I really, even as a kid, it didn't really hit me until really moving to Washington as an adult, that rural areas, communities, that is really the majority of our country. Our urban areas are very, you know, they're very centered, and sure, there's a lot of people there, but the majority of our country really lives in these rural spaces. And there has been even what I can see as that imbalance, right? Like you talked about, all of the resources and infrastructure for anything really is captivated in our urban areas and metropolitan areas. And it's really wonderful to be part of that shift in helping identify areas where resources can be sent to utilize and utilize to undergird our communities here in urban areas, I mean, in rural areas.
Absolutely. Yeah, so true.
Well, before we go on, I just want to invite those of you listening to give us a call if you have a question for Hannah. The number is 503-325-0010. I want to transition to really think about some of the triumphs that maybe you've seen, not just in the last year, but maybe in your time at RLP. What are some of your greatest stories of triumphs that you've seen organizing?
Yeah. Oh, I love this question. And one of the things that I mentioned that I'll just raise again is that, you know, in this most recent sort of moment of real resurgence around Black Lives Matter movement, over the spring and summer, there was, you know, some kind of rally or vigil or protest in every county in the state, which is just phenomenal, you know, and that comes, of course, like out of, you know, decades and beyond centuries of Black organizing that's built up to this moment. And it also, I think, really shows, you know, the strength of the decades of rural organizing infrastructure that has been built through the ROP network and beyond too, of like folks being, you know, really positioned in their communities to show up in that moment and to be able to, you know, make visible support for, you know, the dignity and worth of Black lives in every community in that way. So that was really, really a powerful moment just to see folks all over the state showing up in that way, because so often we've seen like, you know, that it's centered in, like you were saying, you know, the attention in the media focus is on, you know, massive protests happening in big cities. And so seeing that work was really phenomenal. And then, sorry, go ahead,
Alicia. I don't mean to interrupt you, but it looks like we have Please. A caller. So,
ooh, great.
You. Yes. Good morning. You are live on the air.
Is this me?
It's you.
Oh, good. Great program. I don't have so much of a question, but I would like to mention that I saw something on TV. It was public broadcasting. It was called The Freedom Riders. And it was centered on the struggle in the 60s and into the 70s, I believe. And it was so enlightening. I, at the time, was so involved in my young life. I really wasn't paying attention as well. Commercial media was just sort of pre-mutilating and feeding out what they thought was right. But it was a real eye-opener to the struggle and the sacrifice and threat that was going on during that time while people of color were trying to affix their constitutional rights in the public domain. But I just wish every eighth grader would see this and actually write a comment about their feelings about what they saw. It was shaking. I had no idea this was actually going on at the time. Anyhow.
Well, thank you for calling in. And the Freedom Riders, talk about, you know, living through extraordinary times and doing extraordinary things. There's such a strength, though, from that time. I think that even, I know I draw upon the words of Dr. Martin Luther King all the time, because there's so, almost everything that he said in his life, it still rings so true today. And that connection of spirit that continues to build and continue to move. And it just shows that even though there's been so much work done, there's still so much work to do. And so, Hannah, how can our listeners, you know what? Let's go back, because you had more triumphs that you were going to share with us. And I interrupted you, not interrupted, but we had a caller. So let's go back to that.
Oh, no, it's totally fine. That was a welcome pause to hear from the caller. One of the other things I was just going to mention that has been a real triumph for us that we've been celebrating this year is in August, we got the news that after a couple of years of really powerful organizing across the gorge, NorCor, which is a for a county jail located in Wasco County that previously had a contract with Immigration and Customs Enforcement to hold people, to detain people, to detain immigrants, that the board unanimously voted to end their ICE contract, which is our last ICE contract in the state, which is really exciting. And that came out of, you know, starting in 2017, there was folks who were being held in detention at Northwest Detention Center who decided to organize and were on hunger strike. And those hunger strikes continue to this day and are regularly happening at Northwest Detention Center. And folks can check out more about the organizing, the really powerful organizing that's happening there if you go to La Resistencia and their website. But the organizers that were being held there were transferred to NorCor in an attempt to sort of break up the organizing. And they just kept it going and started a hunger strike there. And so organizers in the Gorge, in an attempt to really protect them from retaliation and to help amplify their demands around release and around, you know, some of the inhumane conditions in that jail that was functioning as a detention center, started organizing as well. And now a few years later, due to that organizing, that ICE contract was ended. And so that's really a huge celebration for us of, you know, kind of slowly pushing out these contracts of with Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the detainment of our neighbors.
Wow, that's good stuff. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Rural Race Talks. I am your host, Lanisha Duke, and our guest today is Hannah Herod with Rural Organizing Project. And it's been such a pleasure to just listen about the work you guys are doing and some of the work going on across the state. So, and again, our number, if you want to call in and ask Hannah a question, the number is 503-325-0010. How can our listeners support Rural Organizing Project and the organizations that you guys work with?
Great question. I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, get involved with your local group. If you're curious if there's a group in your area, you can reach out to us. You can email us at office@rop.org or go to our website, which is rop.org. You can get in touch with me. I'm Hannah@rop.org. And we can connect you up with a group. Or if there isn't one in your area and you're interested in doing work in your local community and you're not quite sure where to start, that's our jam. We'd love to help you figure out what that work looks like for you. You can also sign up for updates around the organizing that's happening around the state. And that includes, too, we've been pulling folks together in virtual strategy sessions since COVID started around, like, how do we, you know, keep each other fed in this time? You know, what does it mean for us to organize toward, like, rural broadband access for all? Because that's such a necessity in this time, and so many folks don't have access to broadband. So, yeah, pulling folks together, and you can find more information about that too if you sign up for updates on our website at rop.org. Also, you know, we're really supported financially and resourced by folks across our network and folks across Rural Oregon and our allies. So of course you can also share financial resources with us and donate at rop.org as well if that's something you're interested in.
Thank you. Let's talk about financial resources right now. One of the things that I've noticed probably over the last 4 or 5 months as it relates to foundation giving and grant giving is there's a structural shift, which is encouraging and exciting to see, where grants are being given as unrestricted funds, which frees up organizations, especially in smaller communities, to really put the money where they see it needs to be put the most, instead of, you know, having all of these requirements on how the money can be spent, or restrictions, I should say, on how the money cannot be spent, as well as different reporting and stuff. And so have you seen any changes with some of the organizations you're working with about how they're able to be flexible now in using funds towards their mission?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are seeing some shifts around that. And that has, you know, maybe been one of the, I hate to even say benefits of the pandemic. There are no benefits of a pandemic, but we are seeing ways that folks are creative and, you know, how they're responding and taking care of each other in this moment. And I think, you know, we've seen that there have been moments of like, okay, you know, we need to sort of give an influx of immediate resources to organizations that are really deeply embedded in communities and helping, you know, folks take care of each other. And so there's been, you know, some shifts in that. And, you know, one example of that is we've, you know, at RLP, we were given a grant to like pretty immediately roll out some hotspots to folks in communities to use for groups. And, you know, they're setting them up at Granges and at apartment complexes, particularly at like farm worker housing complexes, places like that where students can be, you know, sure to be able to get on the internet and things like that. You know, so we're seeing some moments of like, okay, you need this, like, here you go, or, you know, some support in those ways. But it's such a challenge, Lanisha, and you're absolutely right that so often it's difficult in this work to, you know, for the people who are most impacted by the work to fully make decisions about what the work looks like, which is such a priority and commitment of ours at ROP. It's like our network gets to decide what this work looks like, not funders. And sometimes that does impact where our funding comes from or what's possible, because we really want that work to be driven by our folks and not by outside sources of funding saying, you know, this is what you need to spend this money on.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, and a question even I'll pose to the audience is, what are some of the ways that you've been able to organize in your community across the state in the last year, you know, because of COVID, and we've had to really think outside the box on how we reach people and how we connect to people. You know, virtual platform spaces, of course, are the new meeting space. But how have you been able to find ways to be creative and effective in some of the organizing that you're doing? So again, our number is 503-325-0010. And we are going to just take a small break. Y'all know I like to put music in the show. And so my all-time favorite artist, and let me say my second, because if I don't say my mom is my all-time favorite, I'll get in trouble. But this is, we're going to shift a little into the love conversation after this. And so thank you, Hannah. We'll be right back. So here's Power of Love by Luther Vandross.
When I say goodbye, it's never for long, 'cause I know our love still lives on. Again, exactly like it was, 'cause I believe in the power of love. When you're close, I can feel the
power of love. So close your eyes.
Welcome back, folks. This is your host, Lanisha Duke. Thank you for joining us for Rural Race Talks on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, and streaming on the web at coastradio.org. I'm joined today by my friend Hannah with Rural Organizing Project. And if you just tuned in, that song again was The Power of Love by Luther Vandross. So Hannah, I want to talk a little bit. You shared about the platform you guys are building to do a podcast and really reaching that space. And so can we talk about the importance of community radio and building relationships with actual stations even this year?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess I'll start with saying the idea for kind of ROP as a network getting more deeply involved. We've had, you know, radio folks in our network for a long time, including really powerhouse folks from Coast Community Radio, who have, you know, I know Carol, who's one of the folks who was around with the foundation of Coast Community Radio, is a longtime ROPer. So there's just like been a deep history and interconnection for ROP with the importance of community radio, and as stations have been getting off the ground. But we have every year a gathering for all the folks across our network that's really phenomenal. It's like part family reunion, like part strategic thinking time, lots of food. There's usually some dancing or music, but folks get together and talk about the work that they're doing and share ideas with each other. And one of the things that kind of came out of our Rural Caucus and Strategy session, not just last year, this last year was virtual, of course, because of the pandemic, but the year before was, you know, what does it mean for us as a network to be really investing in community radio? Because, you know, so often community radio stations are, you know, necessary not only for, you know, the life and culture that they bring to our community and conversation spaces, but also, you know, we actually featured an episode where we talked with Carol on Rural Roots Rising about, you know, when there was a huge storm in Clatsop County and everything went down and, you know, you all had the generator running and you were able to get the police chief and other folks on to talk about, you know, what was going on in storm response. So it's also this like really important necessary infrastructure in communities. So it came out of that for us. And another part of the conversation for folks was like, you know, and when Trump was elected and rural communities were really blamed for that. And so what does it mean for us to sort of tell our own stories in our own words and to really create and generate content? So it's sort of this mix of all of these different pieces of like, we want to have more spaces for building up community media skills across rural Oregon. And then also for, you know, supporting radio stations in whatever ways we can through content generation and different things like that as well. So it led to us really reaching out to all the community radio stations across the state. And we now partner really closely with 19 stations who air Rural Roots Rising, our podcast and radio show, but also, you know, have other levels of relationship too around how can we be supporting you. And we, you know, aired a bunch of public service announcements around the election, around, you know, if you lost your home in the due to the wildfires or you're unhoused, like how can you still vote and things like that as well. So it's been really powerful and you know, curious to hear from you all too, what you sort of see as those connections with community radio and in relationship to folks who are organizing or doing community work. But I know for us, it's been really an amazing part of this last year, has been deepening and strengthening those relationships and just experimenting and trying to be creative with like, what does it mean to really build up media skills across rural Oregon in new ways? And we're still figuring that out. And so I'd also just put in a plug too, if anybody is listening who's like, I wanna make a podcast episode, or I wanna figure out how to interview people, or I'm interested in getting engaged, to please reach out to us. We love to help folks figure out how to do that work.
That's awesome. So before we end our interview session with you, will you just give out your contact information again? Because I also, and will you also share with folks who may be looking for a job, you guys are hiring for organizer, as well as how they can look to volunteer with ROP as well?
We are, yes. Thank you for all of those plugs. That's exactly right. We're hiring for another organizer. So if you're somebody who loves rural communities, loves helping to make them a better place, wants to travel around the state and work with this really phenomenal network of folks that we have, please reach out. You can find that information at rop.org/careers. You can also reach out to me. I'm Hannah at rop.org. So you can shoot me an email or go to our website and find my contact information or lots of information about the other things I've talked about today also. And we love having folks volunteering in the network too. So if you're somebody who's excited about, you know, helping to, we create transcripts so that there's various levels of accessibility and folks can read the episodes for the radio station. So if you want to work on transcripts or do data entry or help make calls to folks around the network or any of those kinds of things, we also always have a lot of volunteer opportunities for folks who want to get engaged in those ways also.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you for sharing your wealth of knowledge with us and information on how we can continue to stay engaged. Again, this was Hannah Harrett with Rural Organizing Project with us today, and we truly appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, y'all. It was great to be with you.
Bye-bye. All right, my friends, I wanted to share with you before I move into the last question of the work of equity and how effective has it been. I wanted to take this time to share with you that this has been a wonderful experience for me. I only had one other brief experience in radio, and that was when I was a 17-year-old freshman at the University of La Verne in California. My original major that I wanted to do was broadcast journalism. But outside of that, I had no idea that I would one day be featured on the airs on Coast Community Radio. And I wanna take this time to really thank everyone who got me on the air, has supported me on the air, especially Graham. Graham has been my anchor during these times together. I appreciate all of my friends for texting me, letting me know that you're listening, supporting, giving me feedback, even saying, I could tell when you were nervous. And I'm like, yeah, that was me. I want to share with you that this is going to be my last show, and it's not for anything wrong. Okay, so please know that. This has been a wonderful opportunity, like I said, of growth and engagement for me. And part of what I'm looking forward to doing next is really building back out of just talking about race conversations, but getting back to the core of what I really believe is central to so much growth, not just around race, but it's really helping people look for the changes that can be made inside of them, and then seeing how those changes occur outside of us, but starting more deeply entwined with our inner workings as opposed to our external circumstances and surroundings. I also wanted to share, some of you may know, that I have made the decision to dissolve the Love Coalition. I believe that in defining how I want to do my work and looking at some of the systemic constraints of our systems, I thought it was best for me to look more into building a social enterprise where I am continuing to do the work as well as make an impact in my community. And so John and I are excited about bringing Coastal Soul back, hope to do at least one, maybe two farmers markets this summer, and just really grow and keep exploring new ways to connect with people on a personal level and be able to show and spread love wherever we are and whatever we're doing. I have had the pleasure of growing in the work of equity for several years now. And as I've been able to think about in retrospect, the work of equity and ask the question, is it working? There's a part of me that says yes, but there's a lot of part of me that says no. And I'll tell you why. I think the work of equity, it was a great concept when it started, but I think now, especially in a lot of the trainings and meetings that I've been involved in since June 1st of last year specifically, is that we're more focused on learning the language than we are taking the steps and doing actual work to produce equitable outcomes. And so I want to encourage you, if you are attending trainings, giving trainings, looking for ways to have these conversations with others, there will always be room for education. And I am starting to see the need for not just education, but space for movement, right? So we know love is a verb. And so like, where do we start doing the work, the action? And yes, inside of us, but even really trying to, again, build that network of support to really see the needle changed in some of these conversations across not just rural Oregon and across our state, but really across our country. I know that it's hard sometimes to have compassion and empathy for others, but I look at just my community of people that I know personally, my friends. There are so many people struggling right now. And so if there's ever a time to be kind, if there's ever a time to stop identifying as Republican or Democrat, if there's ever a time to stop looking at Black or white, this is our moment. I have so much hope for humanity. I have so much hope, but I also have so much fear because we can be our own worst enemy. And I believe if we could truly just get out of our own way, we could be better individually and then collectively. I wrote a piece that I want to share with you today on the story of love. I have had a love-hate relationship with love. I grew up probably with a more unhealthy understanding of love than a, and I grew as I went through, fortunately, some really wonderful work in therapy and really just acknowledging where I was in my own life before I could ever consider wanting to help someone else. And so I want to share with you the transition of the story of love for me and why I continue to share love and speak love and grow in love. The story of love is not a fairy tale. I am no longer the little girl who planned her dream wedding with her Prince Charming at the church overlooking the beach in Redondo Beach, California. My plans included being carted off from the wedding in my Cinderella chariot, being drawn by two white horses. I've discovered the reality of love looks way different, especially after I dared to seek love within myself. The idea of love, or even the reality of love, is no new phenomenon. Love gave birth to every living thing, even death. When I dared to look for love in the mirror, I learned love was not only everything beautiful, but it was also everything ugly. I found love in my deepest pain before I could turn my love into a smile. Before I could experience love in a state of euphoria, I had to discover love in the crevice of my stony heart. We are taught love is all about feeling good. Love is not just the reward of doing or being good. Love is wherever you seek it. Love does not have any hidden agendas, and it only has one intent and one sole purpose: to love. There is no rhyme or reason to love because it is only one of the only absolutes in creation. There is only one equation, so there is only one outcome. The prescription for love has no expiration date, and its effects do no harm. It's not capable. It's not that love doesn't sometimes hurt, but love doesn't wound what it seeks to nurture. I have disciplined myself to seek out love no matter what circumstance I find myself in, especially one that seeks to discredit love. We live in an age of identity theft. If our identities can be stolen, is it not safe to assume the identity of love has been falsely masqueraded as something it isn't? Consider the hassle a person has to go through once there has been a breach of their secure information, or even losing everything in a house fire. Several years ago, I had just purchased a condo. I was still in the process of moving in, so I was not very familiar with all of its quirks. The knob on the front door turned whether the door was locked or not. I was on the phone, distracted, and when I went out to get something out of my car, as I went to get back in the house, I discovered I had locked myself out. Fortunately, because I was on the phone, I was able to call a locksmith. When he arrived, the first thing he asked me for was a way to prove I was who I said I was, but I couldn't prove it. Everything I had to prove my identity was locked inside my home. At this point, he had two choices. He could have told me he was not willing to be liable for opening the door for someone who was not, in fact, a resident of the home. Instead, he chose to trust I could prove my identity to him once he let me in. We too have a choice to believe how our experiences in life have chosen to steal the identity of love to the mystery of the certainty of everything love is. Love is unconventional, yet love always proves itself to be love. I was able to find love in the midst of my brokenness. This led me to the revelation that everything about love has nothing to do with me, but everything to do with love. Don't get me wrong. Love is not prideful, nor does it boast of its own glory. Love just lives in its purpose, no explanation needed. If one doesn't understand the action of love, there is no purpose in trying to explain it. My false perception of love kept me in a constant paralyzed state of fear. I was afraid of everything. I never ventured out of my comfort zone. As long as the imposter of love had me stuck, I could never discover the true essence of who and what love is. This is the job of everything that pretends to be love. If we are afraid of love, we cannot experience love. As I began to search for the absolute truth of love, it became apparent to me, even when I met love in a difficult place, love always revealed its intention of always being with me, no matter where I was. Growing up in church, I was under the false perception love was not always available to me because God's love was only found in being obedient to God's law, translated by man's vernacular. I can't even begin to fathom where I would be if I had stayed in the betrayal of what I thought love was. Even as I acknowledge God in my personal life, I have learned true love never takes on an appearance, but appears in everything. Love is vulnerable. The heart of love remains exposed as it has no reason to hide. Out of everything I've learned about love, I've learned most about what love is not. Love does not deceive nor manipulate. Everything love does is to breathe love into us, through us, and from us. Love isn't an unsettled feeling of doubt, but love is everything sure. So friends, please know, as you see me out and about, and as we continue to grow in love together, better together, I will continue to season everything I do in the name of love.